Welcome to Side Hustle City, and thanks for joining us. Our goal is to help you connect to real people who found success turning their side hustle into a main hustle, and we hope you can too. I'm Adam Kaler. I'm joined by Kyle Stevie, my co-host. Let's get started. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Side Hustle City podcast. Today, we got a special guest, Robert Tau. Is that how you pronounce it, Robert?
It's actually Toll.
Toll, okay.
Ancestors were stubborn, and they didn't change the spelling to make it easy on people.
Oh, Toll. Wait, where are these ancestors from?
These are originally England, but Hampton, New Hampshire is where they settled in the U.S.
Oh, I was going to say, this looks very English.
Yeah, it's very English and connected to other, like, silverware manufacturers and log cabin syrup, but not close enough to make any money off of it. So
so you had to figure out how to make money on your own.
I did.
Oh, yes. Wow. Okay. So Kyle.
My philosophy professor at Hanover, his last name was Smuckers. And he was from that family, but he was far enough away that he didn't get any money from him.
Yeah, that's the same thing with me. It's a different branch. I'm related to every Toll I've ever met, but it's like the first Toll had like 10 kids and it's from different branches.
Oh, well, we were talking before the thing that, you know, my grandma's family's from Virginia, but she's a Reynolds from mm-hmm. Virginia. So,
yeah,
I mean, I'm not getting any money from that either. So it's fine.
Yeah, there you go.
I just have to pave my own way. Huh, Kyle?
Yeah. Well, you did. You made it happen. You tell us about it every week.
I know. I feel like I'm saying it. I'm repeating myself over and over again. If anybody's listened to enough of these podcasts, they probably know all about it. But Robert, it's great to have you on the show. You're in line. Your message is in line with, you know, what we want to be telling people. It's really hard, I think, nowadays to mentally, especially for some of these young folks, mentally overcome some of these like issues that they're having and fight through and not essentially using a word off your page, self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. What do you run into most? I mean, has it gotten, and you've been doing this for a while. Is this like mental issue? Is this getting worse? Is it about the same? Like, what are you finding?
I think it's very easy. I see people wanting to focus on where their weaknesses are and therefore don't focus on their strengths. And so they get hung up on the things they're not good at and don't dig themselves out of a problem versus hire or bring somebody in or have some help where you're weak. Or they are always looking backwards, like how they make a mistake and they don't know how to recover from it. Mm. And that's probably more so now, because right now it's very easy to play the victim. Oh, I'd be doing fine if it wasn't for the epidemic going on or the pandemic going on. I'd be fine if it wasn't for the economy. I'd be fine if it wasn't for this.
And, oh my God, preach. Preach.
And they're looking backwards rather than looking forwards is the problem. And I think I have a little bit of an advantage because my parents, my dad was career military. And so we moved all the time. My average is still less than once every 3 years of my life and never the same place twice.
Wow.
And I'm not 18. You can probably tell. So it's a lot of moving. But they did a real good job of always be enjoy where you are and look forward and don't look backwards at things. And sort of drilled that into my sister and I from a very young age, because otherwise you would have been miserable the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
You really would have been.
Well, are you, have you done anything with, like Myers-Briggs and stuff like that? It seems mm-hmm. like you're kind of in that world. So I'm an ENTP, which I think I'm pretty much the opposite of what you just talked about, where I only focus on like what I'm good at and I don't focus on what I'm bad at.
Right.
And I actually know a lot of people like that. Have you run into that a lot or?
I you do see that too. You do see that. And that works as long as you're willing to hire or bring in somebody or ask for a mentors to fill in those. I had a boss once to say everybody has their flat areas. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like, well, we're not all well-rounded. We have our flat areas. And I'm like, That's a great way to put it.
That is a great way.
Because we all have our flat areas and you fill those in. But if you don't fill them in, then that could be your Achilles heel. There's a great book written, I want to say it was in the 80s, it's been updated since, called The E-Myth, which is about how entrepreneurs start up businesses and can fall into the trap of being the technician, and they're really good at being a plumber. So that's what they focus on, but they don't build their business to support and to run a plumbing business.
Interesting.
So, well, and you have to lay out the org chart that you want to have, and then you may wear multiple hats at the beginning, but you have to have those hats that you can mentally take off and give to somebody else when the time is right.
Interesting. And I believe that. That's 100% true. I'm more of the idea person. Like, I love coming up with ideas. But the problem is whatever that next shiny object is, I go to that, right?
Yes.
So I'm like, oh, really cool idea. And everybody's like, man, that's a really good idea. If you actually did that, you'd make millions of dollars. And I'm like, I'm going to do it. And then something else comes up and I'm like, hey, what about this? And they're like, that's a really good idea too. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this now.
I had a guy I worked for. I had the benefit, the privilege of working for, that was the head of, started up a franchise company, a printing company. And I got to work for him before he sold the business. And so I worked for him for a couple of years, and he was brilliant at coming up with the ideas, but the amount of he'd basically shoot them dead right before they'd actually get to execution. He'd sort of get bored with it, or he'd move on to something new. But he still built a very phenomenally successful international printing company, embracing like the Macintosh when it first came out and getting them in every location, bulletin board systems to transmit files before we were using the internet.
Wow.
All sorts of advanced things that he came up with. But he also hired people around him to support him, because if it was just him alone, he would have never been able to get things through to the execution stage. He was always looking at something new to do.
That's it. Yep. You got to have people around you that are willing to sit down in front of the computer and just do the work, do the research, interview people. If you got a startup, you know, do the market research, go out and do the guerrilla marketing stuff that you don't really want to do. You just want to come up with the ideas. You want to be the front guy. You want to be the guy that sells it. And, you know, oh man, I want to talk about it. I'm so excited about this idea. Let me talk about it. Like, that's what I want to be, right? I don't want to be the schlep who has to sit there and do all the research and put the spreadsheets together. And oh, it's awful. No. Awful.
And he's so brilliant that still, I mean, he left the company in the early 90s, and we're still holding reunions at his place in Tucson every few years.
Wow.
That he still has everybody that worked for him during his tenure from the early 70s to the early 90s can come out and have a barbecue at his place and hang out and get back together again.
So you've been around some visionaries in your day. And I love the name of your book. Speaking of books, that don't be dumb. I love it. You couldn't probably have a more impactful book. Like, if somebody was going through the shelves and they were, you know, Gary V this, and you know, there's a book here and there's this book in business, don't be dumb. Well, who the heck is this guy? Who is he?
I gotta tell you, I am frequently dumb, regardless of the title. But it actually comes from an advice that my mom wanted to my dad to give advice when I was about 13. And he looks up over his newspaper and cup of coffee and looks at me and says, yeah, don't be dumb.
Wow.
And mom wasn't happy with that advice. She was looking for the Leave It to Beaver, something more tangible.
Something emotional, yeah.
Emotional or something. But it's actually real good advice when you think about it. And it stuck with me because it was so simple. Doesn't mean I've always listened to it. But it really stuck with me as, yeah, or is what you're doing make sense or not? Is it dumb? Does this work for you? And I actually had somebody push back on the title at one point while I was writing it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to think about it for a second. No, I'm sticking with the title. I like this one.
Do you look over at him and say, don't be dumb? I would have done that.
Tempting. It was interesting because I was like, it was sort of out of left field. We like everything about it, but we don't like the title. And I was like, I'm going to think about it, but I can pretty much tell you the answer is going to be I'm sticking with the title.
And yeah,
that's what I did.
And you missed the point of the book, buddy. You missed the point of the book.
You missed the point. But what I did was balance it with like a subtitle. to make sure it did have a positive element to it. So just like, so you do have something, and just I also found ways to weave in very positive messages to it so it doesn't come across as a negative book by any means. It comes across as nuggets and learnings, and I've had my hand on the hot stove. Let me help you avoid the same thing. If you're earlier in your career, maybe you can learn some things from it. So tried to frame it in a very positive way.
Well, no, I mean, the subhead sounds good. A leadership playbook to help you be smarter, overcome obstacles, and rise happily in challenging times. Sounds positive to me. And you got a guy who's standing there and he's got a cape on, and I mean, it's looking good. This seems like the type of book Kyle would pick up, because Kyle's always belittling his intelligence, and Kyle's a smart guy, but he's constantly beating himself up. So I think he would look at the book and be like, don't be dumb, man. I'm dumb all the time. Let me just go ahead and pick this book up. What do you think, Kyle?
No. Self-appreciation is the highest form of genius.
Remember you go. That's true. Well, I like this. So tell us a little bit more about the book. Tell us like what do people get out of the book when they read it? So this is for entrepreneurs, correct?
Primarily aimed there. It could help people in different stages of their career also, but aiming at entrepreneurs and ideally earlier in their entrepreneurship to help them out with that. So things they get out of it, we have some examples from work of mistakes, like things that advice that HR wouldn't give you, so ways to approach HR matters and solve things with employees, and how you can work your way through employee difficulties, which can be a challenge for entrepreneurs. How to recover from mistakes. Everybody makes them, but what are your recovery strategies? So rather than focus looking backwards on things, looking at you're going to make mistakes. You may not know what they are right now, but how do you quickly recover from them? And I've got that all through anecdotal through stories of my own experience, or in some cases, even family history experience of those type of things.
Well, I see you've lived in all these places. I mean, look at this: Singapore, India, Colombia, Brazil, Hong Kong, Macau, Sri Lanka, Italy, France, UK, Poland, and then 48 of the 50 US states.
I've been to, yes. I still got my two left. I'm not going to get to them accidentally, North Dakota and Hawaii. So, having my plan of how to get to those soon. So
yeah, good
delayed
for you.
Here, but I was delayed on Oklahoma for like 30 years, and I got to it in 2018. So that was 2019. So that was good.
Nice.
Where'd you go in Kentucky? Kentucky's the only one that matters. Where'd you go to?
It was we were at Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Oh yeah, they beat my alma mater in the state championship 2 years in a row in football.
Well, there you go.
They had some great athletes coming through there.
They do. I was fairly young in the Fort Campbell days, so yeah.
Was this you were a military brat? So I'm guessing Fort Campbell was one of those stops on the.
It was.
Yeah. Okay.
It was. So dad temporarily got out of the Army when I was born, right before I was born, after returning from Vietnam, and then tried other things for a career for about my first 18 months, and then reenlisted. And joined and went career for the whole time.
Oh wow!
So
what separates you as a consultant outside of the travel stuff? I mean, obviously being around the world, experiencing the way different cultures interact with business and with understanding the needs of different cultures and different forms of government even. I mean, you've been exposed to that, it looks like.
Yes.
Different forms of economics. That obviously is big, but tell us about your career. Like, what brought you to this and what were you able to bring to the book?
That's a great question, Adam. It really is, because I started very young in business, whether it was mowing yards or shoveling snow, but then also helping my grandfather in North Carolina with his shoe store that he had. And helping him on vacations and seeing how an entrepreneur runs a business and seeing it from somebody that dropped out of high school and started a business and when he didn't want to move anymore after having a successful career and then built that up in a small town in North Carolina. So I got to help him. And then I worked, my first job was working for a small bike shop and helping somebody that just had bought a bike shop, was converting it from something else how did he get it off the ground and doing all that. So that was a lot of my early side, was working with entrepreneurs, and then with the franchisees when I got out of college, was helping the new franchisees that are buying a franchise, but they were essentially having their own business out there in different locations all over the world, helping them get off to a good start, cut their break-even times in half. And so I bring all that experience, but then I decided to go a different route and went more corporate America side of things and worked for bigger companies like Compaq and Hewlett-Packard, for example, is a couple of them, Pinkerton Consulting and Investigations, ThyssenKrupp Elevator. And as I moved my way up and I did more traditional finance roles in those type of things, and then I moved to consulting about 9 years ago and started doing that and bringing those, the combination of the small business experience and entrepreneur's experience with the large company, how do you solve problems in a larger organization, and sort of melded it together into helping from a consulting standpoint. And even today, it's a mix of helping small businesses locally with large organizations. I'm working with a large non-governmental organization right now, put together and implement technology that they need to help transform their operation. So while I'm helping the local realtor also build up his portfolio and the way he's building his business.
Interesting. So how
do you get started? No, I know a lot of guys that do consulting, and I've never asked this question. How do you get started in consulting? Like, how do you have, do you just throw your CV out there, and, or do you have like just an extensive network of people that you've worked with in the past, and they contact you, and then you use, you know, just build off of their network?
You know, that's a great question, Kyle. I can only really answer myself, but the way I got started was I had left Pinkerton and was looking for a new opportunity, and was connected with somebody that had formed, that I'd worked with several years before, that had formed his own consulting firm and was looking for essentially the first U.S. employee. So he's mainly focused overseas, was looking to build it up in the U.S. And that's what I did for the first 5 years, was build that up from being, basically, I wasn't even a project manager at the time, just getting my feet wet of being involved in projects for the first 9 months. Then became a project manager, then became a managing director, and rose to being the chief operating officer for the firm over the time, and learning the ropes sort of from the ground up, I would say, Kyle. And went my own way in 2018 of forming my own firm to do it, and it seemed like the right time to do that. And at that point, I was relying on combination of contacts and experience of how do you go at them, where the market is, and even the non-governmental organization is somebody I worked with in New Jersey many, many years ago. I reached out to him, and it led over time to a series of engagements with them.
Okay.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah. It's always intrigued me. Like, you have success in a field, and then a lot of, I guess, kind of like you guys with startups, Adam, they go into VC, they become venture capitalists, and they, you know, they guide early startups through, you know, all the way to Series A or whatever they do. It's always interested me how people can leverage their own personal experience into like their own little private business or large private business, depending on how many clients they have.
Well, around here.
Yeah, what was interesting to me was I was very specialized by that time in finance. I was a CFO, and I first focused in finance, but I also had my when I went back to school a number of years after I undergraduate, I concentrated in both finance and IT. So I actually had dual concentrations in my master's degree. And so suddenly I branched to doing more IT work, and I'd done some naturally through times with finance, with financial systems. But then I started doing work in HR, and then I ended up with all sorts of, you build the confidence up over time to where, okay, there's a project looking at key performance indicators for healthcare clinics. Okay, bring it on. No problem. Had I ever worked in healthcare clinics? Not at all. Did it have anything to do with finance? Not at all. But the same tool, you have the tools in the toolkit that you develop over time that you can go, okay, I can adapt to this, and I can bring that experience. I think the other thing is the mentality that, you know, it takes a while to get through your head, but as a consultant, you don't join helping an organization without knowing you're going to leave at some point. And I think sometimes consultants try to embed themselves in and think that this is it. I'll be there for the next 10 years. And mine is, I'd rather come back multiple times and help you again and again with different things.
Well, you want variety too. I mean, when you're a consultant, otherwise just take a job.
Well, and that's the good part for me in consulting is that's the fun stuff. I liked making things better. I liked helping improve things. I liked taking things to the next level, transformation. And that was only a portion of my other jobs. And now it's the vast majority of my job.
Well, also, Robert, you can leave. They can screw it up and then they can pay you to come back and fix it again.
That's happened before.
Oh, of course it has.
Adam.
Yeah, of course it has. I mean, and then you don't have to take on the responsibility. It's like, look, I gave you guys the toolkit. You know, I wasn't there for it. You guys, I mean, you dropped the ball. If you were there, you could take some of that responsibility. But since you left, they can't say anything to you.
We had an example of an assessment done to give them advice on what to do and thinking it would lead to the next phase of helping them. And they said, no, we got this. We're on our own. And we went, okay. And he moved on. And 2 years later, they came back and went, that didn't go well. Can you help us?
Of course.
And then stepped in and helped them clean it up and make it, get it to where it needed to be.
Well, you mentioned toolkit. Mm-hmm. I feel like the book, the way you were describing it and what I've read about it, it's a toolkit. It's like a playbook in a way for entrepreneurs to kind of get out of their own way.
It is. And I even have some things in the appendix of whether it's project management, whether it's how do you staff something, how do you track things. I have an example of something I called Eliminate Stupid, in keeping with the Don't Be Dumb theme of slow, tedious, unproductive, inefficient, duplicative. I have a whole section of the book on that, but then I have the forms and the way to do it in the appendix too that will help.
See, you're the guy I need. You're like the – you have systems. I don't have systems. I just jump into stuff.
I think that came from the franchise thing, Adam, honestly, because of coming right out of school and starting – everything about a franchise is you have a set way to do it. And you follow the system and that makes you successful. And that was my first 6 years of my career, even culminating with writing the operating manuals, the first rewrite of them in like 15 years of rewriting the operating manuals for the franchise internationally. So I think that sort of got ingrained into me if that's how you approach things.
So what's the goal of the book then at the end of the day? Like if I read the book, I'm an entrepreneur, you know, what am I going to get at? Am I going to build my confidence in myself? Am I going to get some sort of playbook that I can follow and say, look, okay, I want to start this company. Here's where I need to start. Robert said, this is where you start. This is the next step. What's the goal?
I think the goal is there's two different paths, Adam, honestly. One would be nuggets that people could walk away with and go, oh, that's a good one. I could really use that to help with my HR issue that I have right now. Or here's how I could take and I'm really missing the whole recovery. When something gets wrong, I always get stuck. Let me use that.
Kyle, you haven't had any HR problems in your current job, have you?
Almost had one today. I got the emotional intelligence of a 3-year-old, so if I feel like I'm being questioned, I don't handle it very well.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
I've had the same thing, Kyle. I had one employee many years ago, this in the accounting world, refused to do a journal entry to adjustment that I required them to make. And they refused. I'm like, no, you need to do it. And they're like, no, I refuse. And I'm like, okay, you're right. You can refuse it. But if you refuse it, you need to call the ethics hotline right now and turn me in. what do you mean? I'm like, if you're saying you don't believe it's the right thing to do, I'll go find somebody else to get it done. And meanwhile, you'll call the ethics online and turn me in. And they're like, okay, well, I'm not going to do it. I said, then pick up the phone right now. Turn me in. And let's do the investigation to make sure that everything's copacetic. Everything's right. And everything was right. It wasn't a problem. But I didn't react well to the, I'm refused to do something.
Yeah, it just seems so petty. Like, they're willing to, like, it's funny too, because they had to do work and then you challenge them with another piece of work. So either way, they had to put in some kind of an effort.
They did. They weren't going to get to just refuse the work and not have to do something.
Yeah, they just get to go about their day.
They were telling me they thought it was unethical, then they need to pick up the phone. They couldn't just say no. They had to do something about it.
Wow. Yeah, I think some of these HR issues, it's some of the biggest problems right now facing companies. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has to be.
They are.
It has to be. I mean, it's such a lack of employees. And then when you do have employees, they don't want to do their jobs. They challenge everything. They think they're the boss. Like, I don't know, where did all this come from? I mean, you've been around long enough. I mean, you and you lived in probably a household of discipline. Like, what have you noticed? What's happening? Is it parenting? Like, what's going on here?
I think there's a lot of entitlement, honestly. I think there's a level of, you know, I remember sitting there with my oldest son, taking him to sign up for baseball and being in line with the other parents. And this is like 6 years old. 6 years old. And they're talking about how the kid's going to be a professional baseball player. And I'm like, maybe they should learn how to hold which end of the bat to hold first.
Yeah.
Maybe they should just have some fun and throw the ball and run around and see what happens.
Yeah. Let the kid decide what they actually want to do.
Let the kid decide.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I followed through with that all the way through. My oldest is both of them are naturally, both boys are naturally athletically gifted, but took different routes on that. But the oldest, he decided his senior year, he didn't want to play football anymore. After being at the highest level, varsity football, everything else, before senior year of high school. And it was like, you don't want to play football? Don't play football. Go play soccer. That's fine. Whatever makes you happy. I mean, there was no, we're going to go get a scholarship here, or we're going to do this or that. Even though he was very gifted, he didn't want to play football anymore. That was fine. He ended up playing, though, at a high level of competitive rugby at the collegiate level. And actually made like YouTube clips for how well he did in championship.
Nice.
So, I mean, so he went on to some very, very interesting things, but he always just sort of followed his own career, whatever worked for him type of thing.
Well, and Kyle, you're the dad of an athlete.
A couple of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, your daughter's killing it right now too. It looks like.
Yeah, she's doing okay. I had the opposite approach. I was very much the competitor is practicing right now. Why are you on PlayStation? And I wouldn't let it rest until he drove up to the field to practice. So I had a different aspect of it. You sound like your son had it already lined up in his head what he wanted to do. He wanted a different challenge. I had boys that just like to, if their friends weren't doing it, they felt like that was what they were working hard enough because nobody else was doing it.
Yeah, I think it was different, Kyle, for me too. My youngest decided he wanted to join the Army at 18, which was extraordinary and not the plan you had for him, but he was absolutely emphatic about it. The only thing I did was I refused to sign the paperwork to let him go in before 18. So legally he was an adult at 18 and could make his own choice, but I wasn't signing anything for it. And I wanted to sit down with my dad, who'd been in professional, you know, 30-year career military, to understand what the real deal was. And then he went in, though, but he went all the way, airborne rangers, all sorts of things, secret assignments, all sorts of things for 4.5 years.
Wow.
And now is back in school, finishing up. But he also did a year of college before he was 18. So he's followed his own path, which is very different. But, you know, now has done triathlons in Canada and all sorts of different things. So it was interesting. So I knew it was going to work out one way or the other in the Army. It was going to be Army prison, or he was going to be successful. One of the two. He was still had some growing up to do when he joined, but it really helped him and he was very successful at it. So,
well, one of the things that interested me about you also is you've had your own issues. You've had a health issue back in 2018. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I don't know, it seems like just from reading, you know, your bio and everything, it was almost a wake up call for you.
It truly was. It truly was, because I mean, it happened so rapidly, Adam, that I had a seizure on March 1st. Ugh. Within 2 hours of, you know, waking up with a police officer at the foot of the bed and getting me out the door to the ambulance, which I insisted on carrying my cell phone with me out the door to the ambulance. Of course, I couldn't do without the cell phone.
Yeah.
Got to the hospital nearby, and within about 2 hours, maybe an hour and a half, they came back and said, "We can't treat you here. You have a brain tumor.
Oh,
we can't treat you here. Here's your choices of places." I made the choice of which one I wanted to go to, which was locally closer. It was either Wake Forest or UVA up in Charlottesville or Roanoke. Made the choice of Roanoke, and it turned out to be just great, because I found a doc that was at the top of his career, stopped everything he was doing. He was going overseas to visit his first granddaughter, stopped, did the operation. But it was really a no choice. It had to go. This thing was the size of a small apple.
Golly.
In my frontal lobe. And it was one of those, my dad, he specialized in medicine when he went back into the Army. And he looked at the images and he says, "There's no way you were functioning before this." But I was functioning before that. But it was an impossibility. And then my recovery is something like they've never seen. They've never seen a recovery like what they saw with me. They removed it. I walked out of the hospital like 7 days later.
What?
After the surgery, walked out, took the shower myself, dressed myself in the hospital, walked out, came back to the house, was playing guitar, no problems. My vision has improved where I barely need glasses. Hearing has improved. Ambidextrous now. It's absolutely just off the charts bizarre, but in a good way bizarre.
Wow. So what about that experience led you to pursue this like passion to help entrepreneurs?
Well, I really wanted to give back. It's like I've had all these interesting experiences, but what good are they if it's only helping major companies that have already, you know, incrementally improve rather than helping other people that are trying to build their own businesses? And it was more of a return to the roots of what I started doing very early when I was a teenager, and returning back to that and finding a way to take that experience and turn it into something that was enjoyable and digestible, I guess you could say, for entrepreneurs, to where by being a storytelling that to tie it together and allow people to sort of get the points in a fun way versus a dry business book. It's not a business textbook per se in that way. And then the other thing I did with it, and I started off writing it, quite frankly, Adam, and I was like, for 6 months, it was like, this is going absolutely nowhere. It was like 1,000 words of, you know, ramblings from Robert. It just was going absolutely nowhere. And I'm like, they're decent stories, but how do you tie this all together? And the glue I found was actually, my mom was a professional musician, and the glue I found was actually songs and themes from songs to tie the different chapters together.
Interesting. Nice.
So it actually blended things from my history, both from my dad, what he said, but my mom teaching me music. So, I mean, I play, there's never an instrument that I've picked up that I haven't figured out how to play. So I haven't quite kept track of how many I play, but a good number. And there's always room for one more guitar to buy, by the way. always room for one more. I've got the rack. There's a couple empty spaces on the rack over this way. But I tied it together with different types of music, which I was told was fairly eclectic, different types of things going back to the Beatles or Johnny Cash, but to David Allan Coe, to the Eagles, to Billy Joel, to Todd Snyder, Led Zeppelin, all different types of music, and took elements of what those songs were and used that to present the chapters.
Smart.
And that became the linkage, and suddenly the book just worked.
Wow.
And it went really, really rapidly, other than the editing part, which took forever. But the writing part went really, really fast once I sort of unlocked the how is it going to fit together.
Interesting. So you know, I really like that. I like that approach. And I think a lot of other people will too, if they read the book. But one thing you could have focused on was this health issue that you had. You could have kept, you know, in that world, felt sorry for yourself. Hey, what if it happens again? I feel like something from that carried over into the book, because you talk a lot about focusing on the present, not the past. And I think there's a lot of people out here that look at their history, look at what they couldn't do, maybe in school, or, you know, maybe their parents told them they couldn't do something, or other people told them they couldn't be. I've got people in my lives that are like that. And they let that hold them back. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think a lot comes rooted very young, Adam, like, you know, with the family always looking forward. And I legitimately remember being in Germany, or in Switzerland. We were visiting Switzerland while we were living in West Germany, standing there looking at the Alps. And no offense to Kentucky at all, but somebody next to us with this magnificent view of the Alps saying, yeah, this is all right, but it doesn't beat the green grass of Kentucky. And I was like 7 or 8 looking over like, are you kidding me?
It's the Alps.
Enjoy this now.
I've been there. It's beautiful. It looks like a fantasy land. It doesn't even look real.
Right. And I've never gotten to go back since. So it was like, that was my one shot. I haven't gone back yet. That was, you know, it was ingrained enough at that age to go, nothing against Kentucky. Great. You're going to get reassigned. You're going to go back to Kentucky in another year or 2 years. Enjoy where you are now. And it was that ingrained from that young of an age. I think that helped. I think the discipline in the household helped, of just you had to see things through and do the right thing. And I think I had to work for things from a fairly young age. You don't get there by having a pity party and feeling sorry for yourself or feeling victimized.
Who's going to help you? Who's going to bail you out? Like, nobody's going to bail you out. Like, nobody's it's up to you. I mean, you hear all these people, it's like they're complaining, they're marching for something. And I'm like, I feel like everybody everybody's an activist now for something. It doesn't even matter what it was. Some guy on Twitter the other day was complaining because council candidates were putting their signs in the right of way, and oh, you can't do that. And he had this big old thing, like he was the political sign police or whatever. And it's like, who cares? Like, is there nothing better for you to be doing than sitting here complaining? And he's like, I'm making a list. It's like, okay, Santa Claus, like,
make
your list and put them on the naughty list or whatever in the world
on the naughty list.
But I'm like, who cares?
I'll admit, Adam, I mean, I have my moments where you sit there and go, why did this happen to me? I mean, I think you wouldn't be human if you didn't have the moment.
Right.
I think the key is keeping them to moments, not wallowing. Is one of the words I use with people, whether it's in business or anything else. Are you really thinking about this, or are you wallowing in your situation versus working your way out? And I think a lot of people, for some reason, they like to wallow. I think it can be an entitlement thing. I think it's, you know, frankly, it's easier in some ways, honestly. You know, the other part requires you doing something. It requires you to take action. It requires you to do something differently than you've been doing before. That's harder work than just sitting there complaining.
Well,
writing your list, you know, and, you know, your political sign list. That's the easy way to do it.
Yeah. But how about you run for political office? Like,
right.
What? Why don't you do that? It seems like you're so pumped up about the city. Like, why? Exactly. Why these other people took initiative? All you did was post something on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to me. And it's, you know, in a way that kind of leads into something else. And I think it's, you talk about perfection and how perfection can lead to maybe procrastination.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think a lot of times some of these people, they've tried things. And maybe they just haven't realized their strengths and weaknesses, and they don't understand, hey, you don't have to be a perfectionist. And, you know, they've done these things early and they've maybe not finished them. So they, why try this? I didn't finish the last thing. Or, you know, you don't need to be a perfectionist.
Well, you know, there's the phrase that the perfect is the enemy of the good, which is something that people need to keep in mind at all times. And even my client, that's the realtor, great ideas, phenomenal ideas. but it's like, get him to place the sign. He'll debate forever where the right place to put his sign is pointing toward his listings. It's like, it doesn't matter.
No, just put it up.
Sign out there.
Yeah.
Put the sign up.
You got 50 other signs you have to put up today.
Just put up the sign.
Yeah.
Just get it done. Or the design of the sign. Who cares? If it doesn't work, adjust it, change it from there. Get the sign up there and you'll find out whether it works or not.
Yeah.
Well, and people do get hung up in wanting it to be perfect as if we have any idea what that really is. And frankly, it didn't strike me until I was going back to school and I, you know, was trying to work. I was working full time at a high level job, going back to school for a master's degree and not sleeping very much at all. And I finally clicked that, okay, stop. Spend 45 minutes polishing whatever you have and turn it in instead of keep working for 4 more hours and then go to work on an hour's sleep. This way you'll get 5 hours sleep and be done with it. And actually my grades went up because suddenly I was sleeping and getting more balance in my life and putting that polish where before I'd be like crossing the finish line exhausted, but not having that polish it up and finish it up looking good time. And the quality got better once I learned to just sort of release it and say, that's good enough. Moving on.
Well,
polish it up, turn it in.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Kyle's writing a book right now too. And he could probably tell you there's a need to be perfect. And Kyle, how long have you been writing this book?
Like putting effort into the book, probably about a month. Like I've got 50 pages written, but, I just gotta keep going and start writing one page at a time again. The issue that I ran into, and you know this, is that there's just not that much information on what I'm writing about right now because it's brand new and it's not really being used by very many entities. So it's kind of hard to find the actual information that I need. Some law firms have some suggestions about how to go about doing things, but nothing's fully up and operational really for what I'm trying to write about. But that's just a lazy excuse for not doing it. So I just need to get it done. And I did the, Steve, the Canadian Confucius that we had on,
yes.
That group that he, that website that, or not website, but that company he went through, Scribed.
Yeah.
I've set up, I'm going to do that next year, but it was like $20,000 or something for the whole process. And I was like, well, I don't have that right now. So
yeah.
Saving up for it to do it. And start in the middle of next year to finish the book, I guess, so that I get it done properly. I'll have everything written, but I let them organize it because, like you said, Robert, the editing is what I feel is going to be super daunting.
Yeah, I would recommend, Kyle, something they call beta readers. You may have already researched this. But
no, I haven't. Beta readers?
Beta readers, which are after you've read it and edited it yourself, give it to people you trust or your target market. And let them look at it and they give their thoughts back to you. And they may be edits. It may be just thoughts. Give it back to you and polish it before you do like professional editing and hiring somebody to do that, because it took the book to a whole nother level by giving it to that target market of just like 4 people. But 4 people gave it. Then I edited it again. Then I got a professional editor involved to just make sure the right polish was there. And, got it organized a bit. So
did you do your own marketing for it then? Or did you hire a marketing firm?
A mix. I'm doing a lot of my own marketing myself on that, but I have, I've started coordinating with folks to help me get me on podcasts like the one we're talking about today, which helps get the word out. But I'm also sending out and offering a digital copy of the book to people that I'm connected with on LinkedIn, to a subset of people that I know, in exchange for like a review on, in the early days on Amazon. So that will help pump up the attraction on Amazon and get you to a higher level.
Have you done an audiobook for this?
I have not yet, but I'm going to just sort of hit a phase two, Adam, some people, I got a good friend that's published a couple books and she's like, I've just hired somebody else because I just didn't feel comfortable doing it myself.
Yeah.
And most everybody I've talked to with mine has been like, it's so much in your voice anyway. it would be odd for it not to be you recording the audio.
Good point. Yeah.
Will you cover the music for yourself, or are you going to pump it in there and have this fight with a licensing agreement?
Well, I actually took the exact lyrics out of the songs and talked about the lyrics to avoid the licensing problem. Mm-hmm. With one exception, because I rewrote the lyrics to a Jim Croce song to use in business years ago. I rewrote Working at the Car Wash Blues to reflect something else of having a bad year and how you had to address it and let people know and communicate. So that is in there with my modified lyrics is in the book. But I've been known to play the guitar on webcast and training seminars and things like that before. So probably find a way to work something in.
Well, tell us.
That's my one regret.
Yeah, I know. I was never good at instruments. But now I don't have the time to learn them. So, but yeah, tell us where people can find the book.
Well, it's available right now for pre-order on Amazon.com. And you can look up Don't Be Dumb or my last name, or first and last name, Robert Towle, T-O-W-L-E. And it shows up there. There's an author's page. Have some of the early reviews from people that I shared the book with after the editing process. So people can go ahead and do that. And it's going to be launched on October 14th.
Oh, wow.
Where they can. So it's coming up soon.
My wife's birthday.
Thursday.
My wife's birthday. There you go. I got somebody.
That's a sign.
Yeah, it is a sign. I got somebody picking up my Turo from the airport at 9 p.m. on her birthday. She got really upset about that. She's like, you should have blocked it out. And I'm like, oh, okay. What am I going to do? But this has been awesome, Robert. I really appreciate you coming on here. And if anybody wants to hire you, maybe consulting or whatever, like, are you still available to consult?
I am. And you could go to 636advisors.com. So like the license plate up there, but 636.
Oh, I love it.
Advisors.
Yeah.
.com. So I tied the family history into the business.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that license plate behind you. People can't see it, but the license plate behind you from Maine when there was apparently only, 1,000 people in the whole state of Maine.
And depends on how many moose were there. I don't know.
fur trappers. Everybody was a fur trapper back then.
Yeah, well, my great-grandfather decided he didn't want to be a farmer in Maine, so he signed up and joined the military. So got out of there, but returned after his 30-year career. And return to Maine, but 636advisors.com, and you could submit information, get in contact with me, I'd be happy to talk and spend some time talking about what your needs are and see where we go from there.
And one piece of advice, Robert, what would you leave people with overall? What would you leave people with? All of our side hustle community, you know, they're all sitting in, you know, maybe they got their job, their 9-to-5 job. They're sitting around. They've got some idea maybe to do a side hustle or maybe leave that job and get a startup going. What would be your piece of advice you would leave people with today?
Well, it's a little bit of old school advice, Adam, but a SWOT analysis is so valuable. Of looking at your internal strengths and weaknesses, yourself and your companies for your evaluating that side hustle, and the external threats and opportunities.
Would you suggest people do a Myers-Briggs to just kind of uncover things that they probably think about, but they're not aware of all the way?
Those are really helpful because I know I found for myself, I changed over time. So I think even if they've done it before, they could be helpful to understand where they're at. But I also think a 360-degree review, if you can do anything like that with people that work for you, that work with you, that work above you, anything you can understand, because understanding other people's perceptions of you is really, really vital. Doesn't matter whether it's the truth or not. It matters how people perceive you. And there's things you might want to shift and change to be more successful.
All right, Robert. Well, thank you, sir, for being on the podcast. I think this has been really helpful to people. And if you want to check out the book, definitely do that. Robert gave us a link for 636advisors.com if anybody is looking for a solid consultant. And thanks again.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate the time.
All right. See you later, Robert. Thank you.
All right. See you later.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Side Hustle City. Well, you've heard from our guest. Now let's hear from you. Join our community on Facebook, Side Hustle City. It's a group where people share ideas, share their inspirational stories, and motivate each other to be successful and turn their side hustle into their main hustle. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next week on the show. Thank you.